I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and
Hello,
stuff.
Welcome to Can't Lit.
Welcome to Can't Lit.
I don't know why I immediately had to. Lately, I've been doing that very like morning radio show voice. Hey, I've got a bunch of sound effects and I'm super annoying.
And you can win a car.
You know. Yeah. We're going to play AC/DC Back in Black and we'll be back at you in 5 minutes.
Boom, boom, boom.
Sure, whatever.
Yeah.
I do like when I'm driving to listen to classic rock.
Really?
Yep.
I can't stand classic rock.
I love it.
Like, are you talking like Bob Seger and shit?
Yeah. Remember that time that I talked about crying when I heard Night Moves on the radio?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, yes. No, that is what I like. See, I prefer that to contemporary pop because I don't know the words and I like to sing when I'm in the car.
Oh.
So I need something that I already know the words to.
I swear to God, you listen to one day of contemporary pop, you'll hear the same song three times.
But it doesn't register in my brain. Like, the lyrics are not in there.
Rosie's sitting on my lap, if anyone's
wondering. Yeah, Rosie is sitting on Jen's lap. So anyway, really important updates on what we listen to while driving. Also, I'm in the Evo, so I don't like, I can't listen to my own music. I don't know how to do that when I'm in the car share.
I feel like there's like a Bluetooth situation.
There probably is, but yeah. I'm always just like, hurry, let's get out of here. Yeah. So I don't know any, and they don't, sometimes they will play songs I know, like contemporary pop songs.
I mean, if it's Selena Gomez, I'm always in for it. Also, but I can say I love an Ariana Grande song, but they're impossible to sing along to. Impossible.
I don't know. I think Thank You Next is pretty easy to sing along to.
Okay, fine. I'm just a terrible singer.
But that song is slow.
That's true. That's true.
So you can kind of like ease in.
Okay, yeah.
You're not, you don't have to catch up or anything.
No, that's true. Yeah. And it's
floppy. I mean, there are songs that I like, but I feel like they don't come on the radio. Like if Lizzo's Juice came on, I would be like, this is great. I'm ready.
They're never playing that on the
radio. They're never going to play that.
Not on commercial radio.
Yeah.
No.
Sometimes they will play songs from Rihanna, Auntie.
Ooh,
that I'm
love.
On board.
Yeah, yeah. Always.
But yeah. I still feel like I am a bit of a snob. And some stuff I'm like, I just don't like this. Like it's bad and I don't want to hear it again. Like, but then, you know, then Bob Seger comes on. Ideally, what I want is... I want Heart. I want Fleetwood Mac.
Heart. Did you say Heart?
Of course I did.
The Wilson sisters.
Yeah. I want Heart. I want Fleetwood Mac. Like, those are the things when they come on, I'm like, I'm ready for this.
Really?
Yeah.
I could, you know, the thing about contemporary radio is that I love my contemporary pop radio, but I can't, like, so the children in my life really like Imagine Dragons, and I can't with that anymore. Like, you've not lived until you had a car full of 8-year-old boys, like, arguing with you about why Imagine Dragons are awesome.
I can't imagine.
No, it's terrible. It's the worst. They also really like Post Malone. I don't get it.
Yeah, see, I mean, this is the stuff that I'm talking about where I'm just like, I don't want to hear this. I get that people are into it. It's not for me. Not everything is for me. Only Night Moves is for me.
Only Night Moves.
We have a very excellent guest with us today. Writer. Really cool person. That
wearing
we like.
A very good hat.
Great hat, beautiful eyelashes.
Oh, those are very good
and
eyelashes.
Like many of our guests, really great hair. Lindsay Wong. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Dina. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Do you have any hot takes on contemporary pop music?
I'm a weirdo. I actually don't listen to music at all.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, I am a complete weirdo. I don't listen to music in the car. I don't even listen to music when I'm writing.
I don't when I'm writing.
I can't listen to it when I'm writing.
Me
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Too distracting.
But like not when you're cleaning, not when you're like doing laundry.
Really? Do you listen to anything?
No, not at all.
Do you listen to the radio at all? You don't listen to talk radio?
Sometimes I listen to writing podcasts. I listen to
Okay, so you will listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. I do find now when I'm not in the car share, I listen to podcasts more than anything else. Like I'm listening to that way more than music.
Oh, I love audiobooks.
Oh.
That's what I love.
So what is your preferred genre for an audiobook?
Oh, anything. YA,
oh, really?
Nonfiction, fiction. I will listen to whatever they have while I'm walking anywhere.
Oh, that's interesting.
I agree. There is something I find more... I feel like listening to music is almost more meditative when you're walking around and listening to a podcast or an audiobook is more engaging. Like I feel accompanied by someone,
mm-hmm.
like a friend, when I'm listening to someone talking a podcast. Whereas when I'm listening to music, I can kind of, I feel like sometimes I lose myself a little bit more. But yeah, if I want companionship, podcast is the answer. I think that's why I started listening to them in the first place, because I was unemployed. And people were like, you should get into podcasts. I was like, okay. I am alone all day and I don't like it.
And you're perfect for podcasts.
So now, yeah, then we started making one.
Yeah.
Now it's been great. Yeah. Yeah. What are your, what, give us some audiobooks that you've enjoyed. Ooh, recently.
Recently. I listened to, I think, Susan Cain's, the introvert. I forgot what it's called.
Quiet.
Quiet. Yes. That one was really interesting. And I was recently listening to my own audiobook by Eunice Huang.
Oh.
She's amazing. She does all the voices really, really well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That must be so cool to have someone like read your words that is a performer and is doing such an amazing job.
When an actor does it, it's, I know that there are authors who do their, record their own audiobooks, and that's great, but it's so much of a different experience when an actor does it. I find it really fascinating, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was like they bring a whole other sense of dramatics to your work that you would never, you could never do. I feel.
Yeah. I refuse to do my own. I'm just like, I'm not going to, no one wants to listen to me for 10 hours read.
No.
So it's better to get a professional. Otherwise it's just going to be there and horrible.
I remember when they were auditioning for my audiobook, they sent me the audition recordings. It's fascinating.
It is, right?
Yeah.
And just hearing everyone's interpretation.
Yeah. They sent like 6 of them. I'm like, I like them all.
They're all great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's I mean, just anyone listening, I'm definitely recording my own. So don't get weird about it.
It was just really nice to hear those audition tapes. Everybody's take on your work is totally different, which is really cool. Yeah.
It is.
That is damn cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
So Jen, do you want to tell us what's happening?
You know, I was thinking about the Super Bowl. Dina and I were talking about this.
So this episode likely won't come out until March.
Yeah.
But we're going to let you know that we're recording right after the Super Bowl.
Right after the Super Bowl. And then like last night I realized that Tom Brady and the Patriots won the Super Bowl and Adam Levine got to take off his shirt when Janet Jackson couldn't show a nipple. And so my whole feeling about that is, this last Super Bowl was like the triumph of like the white man. And that just felt, who cares?
I wonder what the numbers were.
For like, watching it?
Yeah.
Does anyone watch this halftime show for Maroon 5?
I don't know.
I guess some people do.
I'm sure some people just have it on though the whole time, whether they're watching or not watching.
I guess.
Like it's just hooked up. They're ready to go. They're watching the men not kiss, but touch each other. And then everyone's confused. They're like, why is that happening? They should definitely make out.
They should definitely make out.
Yeah. Rude that they don't.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people, but yeah, Maroon 5 just seems not that appealing.
No. And I mean, I didn't understand why Travis Scott was there. I didn't understand.
I didn't even know he was there until you told me when I got here today.
Yeah. But I mean, it's Travis Scott. He's like married into the Kardashian-Jenner family. It's not like, I mean, how much ethics do we think he has? Really?
I don't know.
In fairness.
I mean, I feel like you're the expert on the Kardashians, so you're the one that has to weigh in.
There are no real morals in that family.
Right.
I mean, bless their hearts. They're very loyal to each other. Maybe that's about it. Those are their ethics.
It's like mafia style.
Yeah. But like, it's a whole other rule of like moral code. There's a whole moral code other than loyalty. I don't understand anything they do, which I enjoy it, but I don't know that I understand it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I feel it.
Lindsay, you have thoughts on the Kardashian Jenners? I have many thoughts about them.
I like their lashes.
The ones that they sell? Or the ones that...
They always have perfect lashes.
Oh, their faces look unbelievable.
Okay, apparently Kim Kardashian's lashes are not fake.
They're not fake.
They're not extensions. Those are her lashes with mascara.
Wow.
She just has really long eyelashes.
You know what, though? I kind of remember way back in the day when she was Paris Hilton's assistant, friend, whatever, that she did always have like extremely beautiful eyes and lashes.
Yeah, those lashes are real. So I watched this makeup tutorial where she yanked on them to show the camera that they were real. She's pulling on them. She says, no, these are real.
She's got a real spider lash.
I mean, you know, wonder what that's like.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
I have to get mine glued on.
Are those... Sorry, I can cut this
out. No, I need to know about this.
But are you wearing fake lashes that you're put on or do you have extensions?
Extensions. That's like the only way.
Okay, so you go in for the extensions.
I do.
Can you please tell me... I'm a really fidgety person and I'm really scared, but I would love to get extensions, but I just feel like I can't do it. Like I could not be still for that long.
you just take a nap for an hour and then you wake up and you're done.
That's never going to happen for me. Like if I was drugged, maybe that would happen.
Just do it when you're really tired. Just lie there.
I'm just going to stay up all night so I can get my lashes done.
Exactly.
This is a good idea.
I'll take you to my lash girl. She's by Metro Town.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's happening with me? Yesterday I went thrifting with friends of the podcast, Andrea Warner and Hannah McGregor, former guest. Andrea Warner, hopefully future guest.
Yes.
And we were looking at all these thrift stores. It was so great. And one of the things I purchased was a big-ish plastic pterodactyl. And I was like, why do I need this?
It's pretty big. Isn't it like the size of your head?
Oh, it's tall. It's like a couple feet.
Oh, that's big.
Yeah. And I realized it's because I feel like slowly I do want my home to start to look like Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yes.
Like I want to, I want to just have more brightly colored items for people to enjoy. Like I have a lot of tchotchkes, but they're very specific.
Is the pterodactyl hollow inside?
No. It's like a thick, like plastic rubbery pterodactyl that's got like a, I think it's the color, like the Pantone color of the year. Is what it looks like to me.
What's the Pantone color of the year?
I feel like it's kind of like a coralish color.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. And I feel like the pterodactyl is that color. So I'm really on, I'm on the aesthetic of 2019.
Have you named him or
Todd,
her?
Todd the pterodactyl.
Todd?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. We consulted as I was purchasing this. Also, there were 25-cent grills at this thrift store.
Like for your teeth?
Yep. There was a huge basket and had a handmade sign on it that said grills, 25 cents. But
Todd.
That's what's happening.
Todd's a real bro name.
Yeah. Like, well, I think he's a bit of a soft boy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pterodactyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's reclaiming the name Todd. Yeah. Todd was definitely the name of like guys who played hockey. Where I grew up.
I grew up with multiple Todds.
There were Todds. They were always playing hockey. They had mullets. Oh, they were just doing all the stuff that you expect. Yeah.
Todd always got his teenage girlfriend pregnant. That's how that works.
One of the Todds I knew, Def, had a perm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Awesome.
Yeah. His
was he Chinese? Chinese men get perms. They do. All my uncles had perms in the 80s.
No. I don't think. I'm going back into my Rolodex just to make sure there were no Chinese men with perms in my town.
There might have been.
I don't not remember seeing them.
Okay, okay.
But it's a small town. Like, you kind of see everybody. So I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think so. Anyway, so that's what's going on. Also, by the time this podcast comes out, my book will be out and I'll be, like, really both excited and weirdly, like, super, for the first time, I think, freaked out.
It'll be great.
I just feel really weird.
It's a big deal. Look for it, guys.
Yeah. I don't know why I feel so much weirder right now.
It's okay.
I think I just in general personally feel weird and like feel like I'm at a real low point personally.
Every publication.
So I'm putting that onto everything else.
Every publication is going to be different.
Yeah.
Totally different. Right.
Anyway, this has a great cover by Andrea Bennett. So beautiful. That's all you need to know.
Former guest, friend of the podcast.
Former guest, friend of the podcast. Beautiful cover. Also, the interior has beautiful illustrations also. There's a megalodon chasing a bow tie, a farfalle noodle, which is, again, all you need to know.
That is so on brand.
A friggin' delight. Yeah. Big animals, pasta. That's what I'm into.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Lindsay, what's happening with you?
Not much. I just got back from Toronto on Friday. We're doing Canada Reads for 2 days.
Lindsay's book, The Woo Woo, is on the shortlist for Canada Reads 2019,
which is, how does it feel?
Crazy, very surreal.
Yeah.
I did not expect it.
Yeah. But does it feel like while you were in Toronto for how long? 2 days?
2 days, yeah.
Was it a whirlwind?
It was because they had us up really early doing photos and promo and voiceovers. And I'm like, is this what it is to be on reality TV?
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Did they do your makeup and hair?
They did.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Wow. Did you like it?
It didn't feel real.
Okay.
That is a whole other world if you're not used to it.
Yeah.
Just having someone do the things to you to make you look, you know.
Did they do makeup that you liked?
I mean, I liked it. And then I saw the pictures and I was like, my eyes don't really look open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the Asian eye that I don't know how to do.
So they were like, we're just going to put on white person amount of eyeliner.
Well, yes. I think what happens is they, and this has happened to me when I've had my makeup done by like an artist who's, who doesn't do agent eyes often, is that they do the eyeshadow, they try to create a crease.
Yes.
But you don't, I don't have, we don't have creases exactly. Really. And they try to create one and there's just a super heavy sort of crease, cut crease situation up in here. It just disappears and makes your eyelid look even heavier.
Right.
So you need someone who understands how to do a proper Asian eye.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the photos and I mean, I have so much black eyeliner on. My eyes look half closed.
Black eyeliner, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I don't know.
They try to create a crease and I'm like, no one is going to believe that I have a crease. Like it's not, it's genetic. It's just not going to happen.
I know. I had everything tattooed on.
What? Do you have eyeliner too?
You are eyeliner, just living your eyebrow. Best life.
Really?
Eyeshadow.
Does it make everything easier?
Yeah. I just wake up and go get my lash extensions and I don't have to do any makeup. I even had my lips tattooed, but it didn't work and all the color fell off.
Oh.
And
oh.
That kind of hurt.
So do you have microbladed?
I have ombre brows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is very exciting.
So I'm very lazy when it comes to beauty. I need everything done
but
for me.
But you're also committed.
No, it only, you know, you spend a whole day getting everything tattooed and then you don't have to do it for a couple years. And
it lasts that long?
Yeah, it saves time and saves all this money and buying products.
Yeah, it is supposed to last a long time.
Mm-hmm. This is very exciting to me.
I heard that you could get your foundation tattooed in China. I kind of want to do that.
Oh, but that's like all over.
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
Oh.
I like my ink.
Yeah, okay, sure. It's like all, but what if you get a tan and it looks weird?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It might fade in a year, right? Or will it turn blue? I don't know.
I feel like it would fade within 6 months.
But okay. Also, you wouldn't want to get like that line.
Oh, yeah, the tan.
Yeah, that would be my concern.
Yeah, and like
line.
If you have tattooed foundation, are you allowed to exfoliate?
You could be, I think, right? Because the skin?
I don't know. These are questions.
I think you can still exfoliate. Like people who have tattoos on their arms and
that's
legs
true.
And stuff are still going to exfoliate.
But it's a different kind of tattoo, I imagine.
I think, I don't know. We're definitely going to do some really important research.
We're going
to
do some Googling after this. Real heavy duty.
I'll experiment. I'll go first and let you know.
Okay, yeah. So you've already given us so many good beauty tips. Just get it done for you. Mm-hmm. Which frankly... I can't complain about
it. No, I feel like we should all be doing more of that.
Yeah, just I agree.
So you can pay someone to do it.
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Mm-hmm. I can't even put my own eyeliner on. So I'm just like, just do it for me.
Tattoo it on.
I feel, is that our motto for this podcast? You're going to put that in the subtitle, the subhead for the podcast. Do it for me with a needle.
Do it for me with a needle. Yeah. No, it's a good subtitle. It'll only show up for the people that look for the, whatever that text is called. I forget. So Lindsay, mm-hmm. You have written this book, The Woo Woo. It came out in the fall of 2018 from Arsenal Pulp Press, friend of the podcast, the whole publisher.
Hi, Arsenal Pulp.
Hi, Arsenal. We love you. And this book was shortlisted for the Writers Trust. What is it called? Hillary Weston Prize?
Mm-hmm. Nonfiction.
For nonfiction. Yeah. You are now on the Canada Reads shortlist.
Which is very exciting.
It's all very exciting. Your book is getting and has been getting celebrated and so much great press. How's that going for you?
It's honestly so weird to just sort of have a book that people didn't like at first. And then now people like it. So it's just like, what?
Liked it. I liked it too.
I actually met Jen at the library.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she read, you read a chapter and you're like, keep going with this. Keep going with it. It's good.
I read it like what? How many years ago? Two or three.
Yeah.
I liked it from the beginning, everybody.
I know, you encouraged me. We had this conversation and you were like, yeah, start with New York first. I remember. And that's my prologue.
See?
Yeah, there you go.
It's a great prologue. It totally brings you into the book. Mm-hmm. Good advice.
Yeah, great advice from Jen.
Great. So people didn't like it at first. Can you talk about that as well? Like the experience of putting it out there?
Yeah. So like when you write a memoir, it's sort of like, here is my life, you know, here are my pages. And then to have a bunch of publishers say like, this is not relatable. This is too niche, right? This is not, you know, you don't have an audience for it. And so I think we were rejected 13 times and I rewrote a bunch. And we even had some publishers tell us, they were on the fence and they said, this material is really risky because we don't know how people are going to react to it. And then I was really lucky that Arsenal really liked the manuscript and it got a bunch of great reviews and then the prize nominations. So
risky. I'm curious, like what the, Risky in what way? Like in terms of race or... I'm curious.
I think they meant it more as a niche. They said that there's no market for it. People aren't going to be interested in reading about an Asian family with mental illness because it doesn't... It's not universal. But the thing with the woo-woo, it's about a crazy family. Everyone has a crazy family. Everyone has mental illness in their family, yes. right? So I think a lot of publishers just couldn't see past the tag of, you know, Asian family.
So it is kind of about race, though. It is.
It is about
it
race.
Is because if it had been a white family with mental illness, I think that that idea of risk would not have come
exactly,
up.
Exactly, right.
And look at how many other books have come out.
Oh, yeah.
Memoirs by white people.
Well, it's Augustine
about,
Burroughs.
Like, that's what I always think yeah. about. I'm like, Running with Scissors is one of the most hugely popular books. It still sells. It was made into a film. Like, it's completely absurd. And from that point on, or even a little bit earlier, like, memoirs had are such a huge deal. They're really, really popular. Again, as a bookseller, as a person who's been around books this whole time, like, it's absurd to me that people would reject this and it, have it not be about race or have it not be about something exactly that's like the relatability is in here. Like, someone pointing that out is just totally being like, we don't want to hear about mental illness with this one particular group.
Well, this is the boxes that they put, you know, marginalized writers into. That, so the industry in general, I think this is just culture in general, has a really hard time seeing people of color or families of color being quirky and weird. Like, right. we can remake the Royal Tenenbaums all day long, but put like a black family or like an Asian family or whatever, an indigenous family, and people really freaked out. We have to be earnest all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's offensive.
I know, right?
For sure.
Right. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We've proven them all wrong. Everyone loves the woo-woo. And obviously readers have a much broader sense of what they want to read than I think a lot of publishers would give them credit for.
For sure. And yeah. I think with writing by Asian women, it's supposed to be soft and passive and muted. So if you are a little bit loud in your writing, I'm not in real life. I'm the complete opposite of my book. It kind of makes people uncomfortable.
Yes. And I think in the woo-woo, and as, because you read about yourself as a child and growing up,
right.
you're a potty mouth, first of all.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a bit of an asshole in the book.
Yeah, kind of an asshole. And you play hockey and the family's all, like, constantly yelling and swearing at each other. And there's like dog shit. There's all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not soft.
No.
Not even a little bit.
Exactly.
Well, maybe that, the dog shit is.
And it threatens people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the word that I hosted an event with Lindsay at the Vancouver Writers Festival this past fall. And when I was going over my notes and before the podcast, again, I went back to look at all the notes I had made about your book before the event. And one of the things I said was that I felt like it was explosive. And like you were just saying, like, none of these things are soft. It's a completely like frenetic energy in the book.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's got like so much flair to it. Like the voice is extremely exciting. The humor is biting, but then also obviously there's like very real experiences that people are having that actually are the real things that people are always looking for in a memoir, but you've kind of, you've got them in there in contrast with all of this other stuff. So when you were writing, how did you kind of decide on the tone or the way you were going to approach that material?
For me, I think it was almost a complete accident. I started writing and I think it was really serious and just wasn't working until I finally stepped back and I was like, okay, I'm just going to like write it as just me. So I kind of threw everything on the page, did a lot of editing, a lot of rearranging. And I think this book is very, it's like a more, I guess, angry version of myself.
Because you right now I'm looking at you and I'm like, Lindsay doesn't seem angry.
No. I got it all out there. It's in the book, right? It's all packaged.
That seems very functional.
It's in this beautiful cover of this roasting pig.
And it's piggy year too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
More people are getting it by this now. Even more people than we're
I feel
having.
Like people are going to buy anything with pigs on them.
Yeah,
pigs are
sure.
great. Pigs are great.
Pigs are great.
They are. They're lucky.
No complaints.
And delicious.
Yeah. That's so, why friend of the podcast, Roxanne, has a pig tattoo.
Does she really?
Because they're lucky, they're smart,
resourceful.
And they're delicious. Yeah, she has like, she loves them as animals, but it's like the cuts of a pig.
Oh, Roxanne.
But it has a little face.
Hey, Roxanne.
It's very cute. I can't lie.
I have a question about this, because I think you and I have talked about this before, but like, what I love about the woo-woo particular, what I related to most, is like a discussion about mental illness, which is something that I don't think Chinese families ever really do talk about, especially publicly, openly.
Yeah, it's such a taboo subject. Like, no one ever talks about it.
Yeah.
Like, we all pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I just locked crazy auntie up in the attic and it's fine.
Exactly. And like, that's what we do.
Did you feel like that? Was that part of your motivation for writing it?
In some ways, it was really cathartic for me to actually get out like what was happening to my family and sort of putting it into words. But I think I just wanted to really make sense of my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I think memoir is all about putting your own experiences into some sort of like form for yourself. Like, I wrote this book, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think because when I was reading it, I was remembering that I had had an aunt who was hospitalized, and then, because it was so taboo, she was hospitalized and she wasn't my aunt. She was like a cousin. Mm-hmm. She was married to my cousin and he ended up like getting custody away from her. She never really saw her children again because she was hospitalized. She was, I think, schizophrenic.
Right.
And it was just like a horrible, and I remember this happening when I was like maybe 18, 19 years old. And my mom said, well, she's crazy. And I said, no, that's not what this is about. Like, this is, you know, about locking her away.
Right. Yeah. And just making the problem go away.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Even with this book, my family is pretending it's not happening. Right. We have not mentioned it at all.
Oh, your family's not even acknowledging the book?
Yeah. We're just completely pretending nothing has happened.
Oh.
Which is kind of hilarious.
Like, the book exists to them, but is it the content they're ignoring?
Everything is, we don't even talk about it.
You did mention at one point when we were talking that your dad was disappointed in your advance, and that's maybe the only time that it's been brought up.
Exactly. That was like the only time we ever like really mentioned Lindsay has a book.
That it's going to exist.
Yeah. My brother was like, they went to the library and they got it, and I'm sure they read it, but no one is saying anything.
Did they read it?
I don't know. My brother thinks they did, but my brother hasn't even read it. He's not really interested.
That's okay. So it's actually not bad if they don't read it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But we don't even say like Lindsay is a writer. We just continue on.
So when you say, do you tell them that you were like in Toronto for Canada Reads or the Writers Trust? Did they even?
I mean, they knew I went somewhere, but never asked.
Yeah. Okay.
It's so Asian, right? To be like, what does your daughter do? Well, she is there in Vancouver. Like, what does she do? Nothing.
That's fascinating to me. My mother actually never asked what I wrote or what I did until I was interviewed on Chinese language television.
Oh.
And then she watched it. And then she said, oh, is that what you do? And I said, didn't you see the physical book?
It's like, has my name on it.
Yeah. My picture's in it. Like, yeah, no, she had no idea. She wasn't, I don't think she cares.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't care.
They're just like, you do whatever you do as long as you have enough money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's it. So I guess we'll find out if I have a career or not.
My mother's just disappointed I didn't go into beauty pageants. That's just the way that goes.
Still holding on to that.
I mean, I guess there's got to be a beauty pageant for single moms in their 40s.
I mean, if there isn't, we should make one. Lindsay, I have a different question. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a lot of people have asked you about, because obviously this book has lots of difficult stuff in it. So people have probably been like, Lindsay, what was the most difficult part of this process? But I want to know what your favorite part was of writing this book, because it weirdly also has lots of joyfulness in it. So I'm kind of curious for you, either in the writing of it, in the editing, whatever it is, like, I want to know what was kind of your favorite part of writing this thing that probably people are dwelling on a lot of, you know, the other weird shit in the book.
I think just going through it and adding all the jokes, and then we had to sort of cut them because my agent was like, are you writing a memoir or a joke book? So I went through and I think I cut about 100 pages worth of material. So I had to sort of like make myself laugh while I was writing it. Otherwise, you just can't get through it, or you'll sit there and cry all day, right? And that's sort of like a waste of time for writing and life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm on board with crying all day.
I am. Go ahead. Also sorry, on board. No, I was going to say, so you were writing the jokes kind of in tandem with the narrative as you were going through.
Yeah, you kind of have to put it in there, right? Otherwise, you can't read a passage or a scene. But I think my favorite part, honestly, was like handing it in and being like, I'm done. I never have to do this again. It was.
Oh, that's always a great moment.
Yeah, that was like my favorite moment when Shara Rose is like, okay, it's almost ready to go. One more revision. I'm like, oh, finally. Yes.
That is a great, great, great feeling.
Mm-hmm. Shira Rose Walensky. Friend of the podcast, I feel.
Editor at Arsenal Pulp
Press. Brilliant editor.
So wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so wonderful.
I mean, I need to know something, though, because you went to that Writers Trust gala. How was that process with the dress and the glamming up? No, really, because I wanted, you had a beautiful dress, gold, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful dress.
It was like, beautiful.
It was actually really fun.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, no one's going to talk to me. But then there was Carrie Ann Leung and Catherine Hernandez, and they were really fun. And they're like, let's just take bathroom selfies the whole time. So we ended up just going to the bathroom, and I was sitting on a garbage can, and we were just posing. Yeah. And that was like I think that was the best part of the evening. Otherwise, you know, just sitting there and smoozing with other people.
Like, I feel like Dina and I always want to know about the party.
It was a bathroom party.
That sounds great.
Yeah. That's also, I feel like I've been involved in some bathroom parties.
Yeah, I think you and I have both done that together.
Sometimes you got to get in the bathroom, just like live it up.
With your nice clothes.
Yeah, and I couldn't even like get in my dress. So Carrie Ann had to like unzip me.
Wow.
Because it was one of those like side zippers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, so yeah.
I'm like, why did I buy this dress right now? I have to find a stranger to get me in it and get me out of it.
Oh.
But it was a very nice dress.
It's a beautiful dress.
Yeah.
Did you feel good in it?
I did, but everyone stepped on it.
Oh, it was quite long.
It was very long. You're welcome to borrow it anytime you want. Stay in my closet.
I'll just save it for all the other awards that are going
to
happen.
I'm going to put it on when I take my son to his Minecraft class, and that'll be great.
Yes, go for it.
Swan in there in this gold dress.
That's actually a great idea. It's a real power mom move to just like put on a ball gown.
I want to know though, Lindsay, because this book is a memoir and it's intimate and there's lots of stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Have you had any interesting encounters from people who read your book?
Actually, not really. I think I was telling a friend, I don't think anyone has read it because no one has talked to me yet.
Really?
Yeah. None of the people that I know have read it. None of my friends have read it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So when I was doing the Canada Reads and having all these panelists and people from CBC like, oh, we love your book. You're so, you know, you're great. And I'm like, you're being really nice to me. So it was really surprising.
That is surprising.
I would think.
I haven't received any emails.
Maybe it hasn't been long enough.
Maybe.
Because with this book, I would think people would have opinions and would want to tell you.
Yeah. No one has told me anything.
Oh, that's interesting. It's coming.
Very odd.
I feel like it's coming.
So I'm like, are we even selling anything?
You definitely are.
Yeah, you're selling.
No, they already had reprinted it and had like stickers on it and stuff.
Yeah, but I don't know because I'm like, no one is like reading it or emailing me or telling me about it.
Maybe people are just too overwhelmed by the power of the book.
I mean, it could be.
And they're intimidated. But I do think sometimes that happens, especially with memoir, where sometimes people are like, oh, well, this is a person's life and what they experienced and they don't want to... That weird thing where like you feel like it's either impolite or it's strange, even though it's already been published, it's in book form. I don't know. People are weird.
People are weird. It might take time because your book actually hasn't been out for that long. So it might take some time.
That's true. But I actually don't really want to know what they think. I'm really scared of human beings. So if they want to talk to me, don't talk to me.
I mean, that is fair. Human beings are scary.
They are.
They can be. Yeah, it's true.
Lindsay, I want to know what it felt like to be an enforcer. Well, I want to know what it felt like to be a goon, a hockey goon.
Oh.
As a childhood hockey goon, I have never encountered this before. And again, I grew up in a town full of people playing hockey. Please.
Oh, it's the
enlighten best us on your experience.
It's the best thing ever. You can just, whatever you want, you can just, you know, push someone in the boards or, you know, it's your way, right? And I would love to do that as an adult. Like, if you want something, just get it out of my way.
That was going to be my follow-up, so yeah, I'm really glad that you went there.
I would love to do that, but I mean, that's like not socially acceptable, so you kind of have to wait your line.
Would you still play hockey?
I would if I could.
If there was a league that you could get in?
Yeah, maybe and if I had time.
Maybe
and
we
money.
Need a writer's league.
We do.
I'm ready.
I'll be team captain.
I can skate.
Great.
I can. So I'm ready.
I can make hot chocolate for everybody.
You could be the goalie.
Yeah, you could just stand there.
We'll definitely be pucks. Shooting pucks at you.
No, I'll block you. I'm huge.
Oh, okay.
I'm your like left defense and Dina can
I'm
be
ready.
Center.
But I can't skate.
You just stand and be goalie and just...
But what if I need to challenge someone who's getting into the crease and I have to skate out?
This is an amazing idea.
Teach you. Okay, yeah. Okay, we'll okay. Teach
you. But I actually think that would be really fun.
It would be.
Yeah.
I did not realize I knew that much about hockey that I could even string those words together.
It's great. It's great.
It's
yeah.
perfect.
Yeah. Lindsay's going to get a Gordie Howe hat trick in the first game.
I'll push everyone out of the
yeah,
way.
It's going to be like yeah, it's going to be amazing. I love that. But I do think there is something to that whole idea too. Like as you get older, you feel like you have to be more understanding of people, but also there's stuff where you're just like, no, I don't want this. Like,
exactly.
So the boundary of it sometimes can be aggressive. And this book is aggressive. This book is not lightly explaining what's happened, and it's not making light of, I mean, it is light in that there is humor in it, but it's not like, it's not taking any shortcuts. So when you were, I want to know about the structure. So you talked a little bit about how Jen made this suggestion of including mm-hmm. New York. So having a prologue, but what about as you were writing it? Like, I assume there were lots of things that you had written and then you decided like, I can't include this or this isn't serving the story. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is linear after that.
Right.
So how did you kind of decide what things were going to be included and how to sort of proceed from like a certain point in your childhood to the next, to the next, to the next?
Mm-hmm. I think that because the woo-woo, it has a lot of things going on, right? So you kind of have to pick and choose the ones that serve the best purpose. So I remember with the conversation we had, Jen and I had, I started with the wedding first, and people, I remember you were saying like, it's confusing, you know, we need to ground people and sort of lead them into what the book is about, right? Like, so, like if you're starting with a movie and you start with an image, right? Being in New York and having vertigo. And then that was one place where I started. And another thing I took out was my dad's family, because the book is about my mom's family, right? So my dad's family grew up in New York and they grew up in the projects, and there was a whole chapter on it, and I actually took it all out. So that could be another book memoir.
Yeah. So that was like to kind of keep things just flowing and keep things focused.
Right. The climax is the bridge jumping, right? Yeah. So I had to work each scene to build up to it.
I mean, I think with any kind of memoir, sorry, with where you're challenging the reader, which I think the woo woo does challenge the reader. And I think I might've said this to you, like, low those many years ago, is that you have to build trust. The narrator and the reader has to build trust, yes. Which is what that New York stuff I felt was doing.
Which was brilliant.
I mean, I'm a good editor. I'm not going to lie.
But I think you're right. I think it's about, because when you're reading a memoir, there still is a narrator. There's still a protagonist, but the reader also knows that it's the writer that is speaking from their own experience. So there is something like the craft of that seems extremely stressful to me. So having some kind of tool, some kind of idea to pull people along is essential. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying. This is why nonfiction is terrifying.
Well, I think structure is hard with nonfiction though, because there's so much of your life that has its own structure.
Right.
How do you impose
yes.
a narrative structure upon yes. it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just pick and choosing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leaving things out. Yeah. And choosing timelines and how those all go together. Mm-hmm. This is part of the reason I don't write memoir either, really. So it's fascinating.
Yeah. But I just admire people who do fiction and poetry, right? Because there's no structure for especially poetry sometimes. Like at least nonfiction, something happened, right? So you can put it together.
Yeah. You're also, I've heard, writing a YA novel.
Yes. I'm really behind that one, but it's due at the end of the month. It's very fluffy. It's very, really lighthearted. The editor actually asked my agent, she was like, do you want to do something? It's sort of like Crazy Rich Asians meets the Joy Luck Club meets Anna and the French Kiss. I mean, it's so different from Lindsay. And of course I always say yes. That's just my problem. I'm like, if someone wants me to do a thing, I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. So now I'm trying to figure out how to write a very lighthearted YA.
Oh, what's it called? Does it have a title?
Right now it's called The Summer I Learned Chinese, but I don't know if they're going to change it or not.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
So you're writing it to contract.
Yes.
Oh, wow. How does that feel?
Very stressful. Uh-huh. I've never had to, you know, sell a book on proposal and then do it, right? Because now you're like writing against a deadline. Whereas I think it's a lot better when you have a full manuscript out and you kind of know what's going on. Right now, I'm just like, oh, deadlines. What do I do?
You know what, though? That's also interesting because very often nonfiction, even memoir, comes from a proposal, a book proposal, mm-hmm. and not from an actual manuscript. So the fact that you had this manuscript ready, isn't that normally the case?
Yeah, I think so.
With nonfiction, like you're submitting a proposal, you have some pages to mm-hmm. ready, but usually it's with fiction that you have to have the full manuscript yes. ready to go before anyone's going to yes. say yes. Mm-hmm. So you already had this completely you had a finished. Full manuscript yeah. that you were sending out.
Exactly. I'm just so used to that, especially with the whole workshop background I have. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so used to just sitting there revising until it's perfect before we send it out. Now it's kind of like, okay, something's due. You have to, it doesn't matter what it is. You just have to finish it.
Yeah, no, that's super. It's really interesting to me.
The first
yeah.
time I wrote a book on contracts to contract was really stressful.
Yeah.
Like I remember just thinking, what do you mean someone cares about this first draft? What do you mean someone's going to look at it? What do you mean? What do you mean? Like it was really scary. It was nonfiction also. So it was just really, really frightening.
Right.
I'm getting more used to it now, but it's like, it's not, because I was so used to writing in isolation yeah, for like 5 years.
That's what I've been doing, yeah. right? So, and then with all this promotion with the woo-woo, you're kind of running around talking to people and you're doing like all these interviews. And then it's like, where's my writing time?
Yeah, that is a huge thing when you get some success and you have opportunities, but also you kind of fall out of, if you have a routine, you fall out of it. If you, right. yeah.
So that's what I've been balancing. Yeah. But whatever happens, I have to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Deadlines or suggestions?
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say.
True.
No. This is my very last deadline, they told me.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
I said that.
You're going to get it done.
If I'm editing anybody's book right now, my deadlines are never suggestions.
yeah.
Perfect.
Jen's got a hard line. She's got a real eye crease about it.
I have a real, although all of the writers I've been working with as an editor have been remarkably punctual.
That's really good.
It's been Andrew Wilma and Alicia Rosnow. They're so punctual. They send me like long letters about all the things I changed in case you don't want to read the whole manuscript again. And I'm like, no, I want to read the whole manuscript.
These are great people.
I mean, they're just
like,
lovely.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really responsible, punctual.
Yeah. I think I've gotten less responsible lately. I don't know what happened to me.
I've never written a page of things that I changed. I just said, here, you can read it. And yeah, you figure it out.
I was a good student. I was a good creative writing student, but now I'm a terrible writer person who hand things in late.
Oh, yeah. I do it too now too. It's
That's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, I don't know.
Claim your space, Lindsay. It's fine.
yeah. How was your MFA experience?
It was a very, very interesting program because we only did one thing and that was nonfiction, right? So I did everything nonfiction. It was really small and I was like I think I was the only person of color. So it was
in the nonfiction group
at Columbia. Yeah.
Are you joking?
No, I was like
all the MFAs
of the nonfiction. People, okay. Just 20 okay. of us. Right. I didn't really hang out with poets or fiction writers. So I was a diversity there. So really? It was a very different experience with people who had a lot of them just didn't know how to deal with my writing. I had a lot of people tell me, oh, so this is, you know, Asian American writing, but you kind of act really Asian.
What does that mean?
And I'd be like, can you just critique the words?
Yeah.
it was like really, people just didn't know how to read it in terms of race. So it was really different from UBC.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you're from here, which is a totally different.
I did that undergrad program at UBC.
Yeah. Very different demographic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting.
And we do all these different genres and people are generally more, I guess, accepting.
Open maybe?
Open. Yeah.
I find it very fat because I did most of my workshopping at UBC also. Mm-hmm. And there were a few times, but it was never from other students. It was always from like a visiting writer in residence or something where like this visiting poet, I think he was Irish, said to me, I had given him my poems. He was supposed to read them. It's part of the writer in residence situation. And he handed them back to me without a mark on them. He says, I'm sorry, I don't know enough about Chinese and Japanese poetry to critique your work.
Yeah.
So were you like, I'm writing free verse? Calm yeah. the fuck down. Like,
pretty sure that wasn't a haiku. All right. Yeah, chill. Like, yeah.
That is also extremely just rude. It's racist. It's insulting to poetry in general.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible news all
exactly.
around. That's bad.
Right.
That's
that
bad.
Was actually, I think, the only time at UBC that ever happened. And this particular visiting poet did it in front of Keith Millard and Keith Millard got mad at him.
Oh, I'm glad.
Bless yeah, Keith. He did. Yeah.
Bless Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. Did have one question. Do you just sit around at home in fabulous gowns and lovingly pat your book?
I would love to do that. I would, but I'm always in my pajamas. I don't even, you know, comb my hair sometimes. I tutor, right, to make ends meet. And I would just love to like hermit myself into a little cabin in the woods. I actually did a really great residency in Oregon where I chopped firewood.
What?
Yeah, in the winter, they put you in these little cabins, you make your own fires, and you chop wood, and then they just give you food every week or so, and you don't see a single person. And I love that. I want to go back.
I'm so into. I feel like you'd be really good at chopping wood because you were like a hockey enforcer.
Yeah, it was really fun.
You've got all that upper body strength. You're ready to roll.
I know. I chopped wood and I made like, I think 7 fires a day because that's all I had to do because we had no like electricity or internet. Right. And I got so much writing done.
I bet. Yeah, you chopped wood.
Children there. I was going to tell you about that one.
Oh God, I could not be with my child with no internet.
And you could bring the dog.
The dog would be fine. It'd be the kid.
I'll stay home with Oscar.
You could do that. He would love it.
I would not do well in that environment, I think.
I mean,
I wouldn't do any work.
But you have nothing to do except make fires.
I know, but I would just like be with my own thoughts, which are terrible. So I would like not want to write them down. I'd be like, these are bad. This is bad. I'm going to just wear gowns and stroke Lindsay's book at home instead.
I think I might do that.
We need to have writer's prom. I was talking to Carrie Ann Leung and she's coming in March and she's saying we need to do a prom where we all dress up.
Is she coming in March?
Yeah, for Growing Room.
So maybe for Growing Room, we can all get together and do something fun.
Yes, let's do that. That sounds fun. I have so many dresses.
I'm ready. So Jen.
Yes, Dina.
Are you ready for your emotions?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's time for Jen's emotion corner. Are you ready?
It's a doozy. Yeah.
Oh God. Oh, I'm not ready. Okay. Go.
Okay. So I was just at a party with all of like my mom friends on the weekend. And as it turns out, I burst into tears. And all of my mom friends kept yelling at me, you need to do what you want to do. And I said, but then there's Oscar, but then there's the dog, but then there's this. And then they said, no. Those things will adapt to your needs and what you want. What do you want? What do you want? And then I realized that it's been so long since I've thought about what I want. And then I started yelling that back at my mom friends. And I said, what do you guys want? And they're like, we don't know either. And everybody started crying. This is all for everybody out there who's a writer and also a parent. It can feel really hard to take that time to write. And it feels really selfish to put your kid in front of a movie so you can get some writing done. It's okay. It's all right. Your kid is not going to, you know, brain is not going to rot because that kid has watched Finding Nemo 17 times. It's fine. It's okay if you don't make enough money to take your kid on a fancy European vacation. The writing is your decision. Your child will adapt. I feel a lot of guilt that I didn't take a job in corporate communications and make like $100,000 a year, but it's the way it is. Also, and it's okay.
Don't feel bad.
I don't know. I think Oscar's got a pretty good life in general.
I think he has a great life. You're a great mom and capitalism is bullshit. So
in conclusion,
but also, yeah, thinking about your own needs when you have other people to care for or be concerned about is a stressful thing.
It's hugely stressful and I don't want to think about it anymore. Anyway, it's true though. Children and dogs will adapt.
Also, you think kids don't want to watch movies? They love it.
Also, Oscar likes my books.
Great.
So whatever. It's fine.
I watch TV and movies constantly as a child, and now all I do is read and write books. So, like,
me too.
Like, it's clearly fine.
All I did was watch TV. Do you know how much Knott's Landing I watched?
Do you know how much Three's Company I watched?
I love Three's Company.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
What a fine show.
R.I.P.
What a fine program.
R.I.P. Three's Company.
R.I.P. Oh my God, I can't even remember his name.
John Ritter.
So sad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you ready for your rage minute?
Yep.
Okay, Dina, go.
Okay, established writers complaining about grants. Ha! Listen, writers, I'm sorry, but the point of grants is not for that to be your yearly salary. And grants are there for all writers. And if you ask me, a person who has never gotten a grant and may never apply for one again, I don't think anyone should be getting a grant every year. Pass the money around. Everybody deserves that opportunity. And yeah, I might be a dick, but that's also just how this shit works. If writers want to wrongly complain about who's getting money now and who isn't, they only need to look at the history of who was being published and who wasn't to know that that is racist, sexist bullshit. So, in conclusion, and also, so many genres were not represented. So many things were not represented. So, the innovations we're seeing now are exciting. I'm excited about them. I want the money to get spread around. And I'm not interested in any of this boring bullshit. So that's what I have to say.
In conclusion, capitalism is bullshit.
Thank you. Thank you. So you can find us at cantlit.ca. You can find us on Twitter @cantlit. You can find us on Facebook at Can't Lit. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere that you get your podcasts. We would love some new reviews and ratings. I actually realized that I haven't checked any of the international iTunes, so I need to go in and make
sure. Do we have international listeners?
Yeah.
That has never occurred to me.
I think there are some, yeah, out there in the world.
Hello.
So,
hello, hey, international friends of the podcast.
Hey, we love you. Lindsay, if you would like people to find you online, where can they find you?
I think I'm on Facebook for sure and Twitter, but I never use Twitter.
Yeah. And you have a website?
I do. And which I actually don't know my address.
So I don't know what it is either, but if you Google Lindsay Wong writer, it'll come up
It'll probably come up. Yes.
Yeah. So Lindsay's great. Buy the woo-woo. Don't mess around. It's the year of the earth pig. You need to get this book.
Buy the woo-woo. Do you like quirky things? Things that make you laugh?
Yeah.
Do you like hockey? Roasting pigs?
Like this, this will be a great film one day.
Oh,
it's going to be great.
Yeah,
I know it's going to happen and it's going to be great. So Lindsay, we only have one question left for you. Ooh. What can't you with?
Ooh, I can't with cold weather.
Yeah.
You're in the right place right now.
Yeah, I can't do it. I was minus 18 when I was in Toronto and I was like, I can't do this. And they were like, you know, you can take a cab to CBC, but I'm like, it's 5 minutes away and I feel too much of a diva to do it. So I just brave it. Tattoos, obviously. Lashes, I think. That's like the only three things.
So cold. Mm-hmm. Real eyelashes. Mm-hmm. Real eyebrows.
Those are the things Lindsay Wong can't with.
And I love every second of it. So you got some great tips today, listeners. And what a wonderful guest, Lindsay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was extremely fun. You're wonderful. Bye the woo-woo. Bye.
Please buy it.
Bye. Please buy. Bye.